Welcome to 11EA. Hey, we're here again. Right, we're doing Diamonds Are Forever tonight, and I've got the usual suspects with me. That's Justin. You right?
All right.
Terrific. Let's move on. Samir, how you doing?
Yeah, good, mate. How are things with you guys?
Well, Justin's all right.
Yeah.
And yourself?
Yeah,
I'm all right.
I'll tell you why I'm all smug. Because I'm looking at our viewing numbers, and the public clearly don't like you two, just you two. So,
yeah. Oh, right, yeah, but yeah. Yeah, the podcast stats, yeah.
Clearly, it doesn't work without yours truly. So, I think you've nearly got to double figures. I'm not sure, but you'll have to look.
The YouTube stats are not particularly good, but the Spotify stats are okay, and we're starting to gain traction on Google Podcasts. The Apple stats I can't get hold of at the moment.
Okay.
So who knows? But yeah, I'm quite happy to concede that. I'm quite happy. You know, it works better the three of us, definitely.
Yeah.
Just don't tell him that. Bloody hell. Yeah. Okay, Justin, you bring the comedy. We agree.
It clearly is just a bit that's missed, isn't it, boys? You know? You know, can't help it. These are boring old farts. You know, they need the bit of vibrant. You know, a bit of the JD in it. We need a bit of that.
You know what? I mean, that might be right. But if we ever get into doing this live and doing live streaming, that's the day that we are fucking cancelled on YouTube. It's not happening because the amount of edits I have to do with some of the stuff that you say, there's no filter.
I'd be ruined, and I wouldn't be able to do this ever again because I'd be living in a cardboard box under a bridge. I'd be ruined.
Yeah, it'd be cancelled and deplatformed. Yep, sacked.
Yeah, we need a clause now because of that. If we go live, is Justin will not talk about Nazi uniforms or about...
great. So we're going to have to edit this bit as well. Brilliant. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Sorry, all right, Justin. So Diamonds Are Forever then, fuck's sake. That's why we're here. Right. So anyone want to start us off with anything?
Yeah, I do. I'm going to do my usual jumping in there first. I want us to discuss at various times during this film how you go from making quite a sort of good Bond film, which we've established is Paul was your best one you've seen, was in my top three, to this utter shite. I got the overwhelming feeling straight away with this film that Connery was absolutely, you know, yeah, look, I'm back. You know, I've got what I want and I'm back and I'm going to act in the way that I want to act and do it in the way that I want to do it. His demeanor, his body language, it was like, yeah, this ain't going to be nothing, guys, without me. And look, I'm back. Do you know what I mean? A bit like my attitude, actually,
it's quite comparable. Yeah.
Yeah. But the opening to this, it's just absolutely horrendous. I mean, there was a bit of rewind film that was fast-forwarded with a guy hitting his head through the thing. He didn't even fucking say. His lips and tongue didn't even move, you know, when he said, go and see this bird. You know, you straight away see a bit of, you know, amnesia, a bit of, you know, bra around the bloody head. You actually saw her tits in that as well, you know, with the straight in there with the strangling. I was thinking, at what point we must discuss this? At some point, there's going to be a Bond film where suddenly that stops, and we're going to be like, it must have been then when people started to complain, you know, about this sort of beating up on women, etc. But I watched this film. The only reason why I watched this whole film all the way through. It's because we're talking about it. And if I didn't, I'd have gone quiet at about halfway point. And the only really good thing about this film was the soundtrack with Shirley Bassey again, isn't it? You know, that.
Yes.
That's the only good part of this film.
Yeah, I'll jump in there, right? The whole Shirley Bassey track. I prefer the Kanye West remix. But yeah, you're right. My first note, right? My first bullet point of my notes are exactly that. My notes say opening scene was like a school play. What happened to incidental music? Because that's another thing as well. There was no background music to it. It was all like it was performed on on a shitty school stage, and all the parents were sat, you know, watching it and pretending to enjoy it, but actually, like, this is fucking bollocks. Why are we here? We could be watching EastEnders. It was, yeah, it was pretty bad.
Okay, I'm going to come from a different angle because there had been a 4-year gap since Connery had actually did The Last Born, You Only Live Twice. And when you're talking about his body language, it wasn't his arrogance. It wasn't arrogant body language. What it was basically, I'm bored of this. I'm only here because you've agreed to pay me $1.25 million, which was a world record at the time, and also 12% box office. His basic went to the Scottish Education Trust. So his $1.25 million he basically gave away. And also, I think in that 4 years, Connery had not aged well. I think you look at You Only Live Twice, he's still the Bond we knew from the 60s and the Bond that most of the world loved or loves, even to this day. But in Diamonds, it was just a guy, a shell of himself, not interested, only there because of money. And that's it. He was fed up of the part. He just did not like Bond. He just came in because of a contract he was given, they agreed on, where he could make whatever movies he wanted to make as well, two of them, and a 12% box office as well.
So you said that, you know, Connery was kind of bored of this and didn't want to do it anymore. Yes. But he gave his money away to, yeah, some people in the Scottish government or wherever it was.
No, didn't his he own also... Scottish. Yeah, sorry.
His own what?
His own education trust in Scotland called the Scottish Education Trust. He started it off.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay. And didn't he also give his money away, his film proceedings away before that as well for another movie? Was it And You Only Live Twice? He gave money to a charity or something?
He may have done, but I don't think it was his basic he gave. He gave a percentage, I think, of what he earned to a charity before. This was his basic he basically gave away, which was, I think it was in Guinness Book of World Records at the time, being the highest paid actor in history with a basic salary, not with the add-ons such as the box office.
No, so okay. That,
yeah.
Yeah, so it was just something that came up in a Facebook group that I'm now a member of. I joined some Bond Facebook group just kind of, you know, for tidbits, really. And somebody was talking about him giving away his money because Diamonds Forever came up in that group just sort of conveniently at the same time. So yes. Coincidental, I guess. And people are slagging it off in there as well, saying it's absolute dog shit. They hated this movie. So this is not a well-liked return of Connery.
Because it's just so rubbish.
Well, basically,
I honestly thought I was embarrassed for Sean Connery in this film. I mean, this is his last film, and this is what he wanted to be remembered for in his last film. I'd have been embarrassed.
So coming to the last movie, it wasn't his choice. He didn't want to come back after he only lived twice. What happened? Obviously, George Lazenby said, okay, see you later, guys. I'm not interested in doing another Bond. So he left. They tried a few other actors, but the head of Universal Studios basically called in Albert Broccoli and Saltzman and said, I don't care how much it costs, bring Connery back. So basically, they brought Connery back with a deal, as I said, with the highest basic in history at the time.
I get that. But yeah. if
but he wasn't wanna... interested. He wasn't interested.
Then why did he bother doing it then? I mean, obviously, it didn't really seem to affect his career, but he didn't know that at the time, did he? You know, if you didn't want to do it, you have a choice. If you don't do it, or do it and make it your best swan song possible, isn't it?
I think the reason why he did it, he basically said, I want... a 2-movie deal, any movie he can produce and direct, which he produced one of them and then the other one never got off the ground. Plus, he goes, I want to give my basic away to this charity. So anyone who was struggling in arts or any subjects in Scotland would basically have money to leave Scotland and progress into education in arts and also get into the movie world and leave Scotland, which at the time was a very, very poor place and deprived place. So that was the deal. That's the only reason why he did it.
I see. So it's like a means to an end. He had bigger ambitions and goals, and you thought, yeah, fuck it, I'll just do another one, and then whatever, I'll just phone it in, and then yes. I can do what I want afterwards then.
Yeah, that was it. Yes. We'll go to another point a little bit later on once we've discussed what happened after this movie as well.
In the meantime, we're just Karen slating it. The gun would never the gun would never have worked in that sand pit. They're only doing his face, so why did they need to submerge him? How did he die from that? And the biggest thing that annoyed me about that scene was, you know, of all that stuff coming down, splashing, he was right down the side of it and had somehow managed to get none of it on him at all. No splash, nothing. Yeah, absolutely pristine. It was like, you'd have been covered in the fucking stuff, wouldn't you? Just rubbish. Utter rubbish.
At this point, I don't want to get too hung up on that opening scene. I think, you know...
But we can't say, oh, it's the 60s, because this one's in 1971, so...
Yeah, so that's it. That's
not the 70s then.
One of the things that really bothers me about these early Bond movies is the lack of continuity with actors. We're on our third Blofeld now. Yeah, and also, yes. That guy, it was in You Only Live Twice... as an English agent or whatever it was. So it's really confusing.
Yeah, Jo said exactly the same thing. She said, this is the, you know, obviously it's Blofeld, we could tell, but we've seen this guy before. And why so many bloody Blofelds?
I think what the case was, they wanted Donald Pleasance to actually continue, but something happened with his agent or something in... he had to turn the actual part down. And also at the time, one out of the two producers, I can't remember which one, didn't think he was good enough, and he wasn't mean enough looking, and he wasn't believable.
It's money, Samir. It was money. Everything is money. You know, not enough money, you know?
Potentially it could have been scheduling. You could have agreed to something previously and had other commitments. That happens quite a lot in the acting world.
So, yeah, that's what happened with Telly Savalas. Basically, it was his schedules, and that's why he never came back as Blofeld in Diamonds Are Forever. Otherwise, he was going to do that one. And it was, I think, if I remember correctly, I think he had just signed on for Kojak, and they wouldn't release him for the movie or something. So, obviously, this guy, Charles... I think it's Charles Gray from Off By Heart who played Blofeld.
Yeah, it's slightly frustrating, you know, because the continuity just kind of just breaks up, and you're just like, oh, this is confusing now. And you almost don't want to get involved because you think, well, I really like Telly Savalas as Blofeld. It was fucking brilliant. It's a damn shame that he didn't come back and carry on the character, because I think, as we said in our last review, from Her Majesty's Secret Service, they really commanded that role. He looked like the kind of guy that could take care of things himself. You know, he could kick the shit out of someone if he needed to, you know, or pull the trigger if he had to.
And also, he could.
He didn't look like a private school villain.
Yeah.
No, I think he also, if there was a one-on-one between him and Connery, let's say Telly Savalas and Connery as Bond and him as Blofeld, you would believe that he would hurt Connery or Connery's Bond if he had to, and escape from the situation. Mm. While with the others, like these two guys, like Charles Gray and Donald Pleasant, you think, Connery gets him, that's it, it's over.
So, Justin, you mentioned about Connery looking bored and fed up with this. Now, I actually felt quite comfortable with him coming back because it was like an old friend coming back. The mannerisms, the way that he portrayed Bond, just the sort of, you know, the little smug looks, the corner of the eye looks, the, you know, I know everything kind of attitude of Sean Connery in these movies.
I agree with you. I don't know if you two got the film up, but I know you tend to do what I do, Paul, and watch it whilst we're talking. If you put it to 7 minutes 56, and this is the sort of little scene that got me, where he was looking with M and the diamonds in the little glass case, and he did this like little bounce and sort of like as if it was like a little school kid saying, oh, do we have to do that math thing, Mac? You know, honestly, if you watch it, he's like talking to his dad, like, oh, I don't want to do that. And he was just like, what?
That passed me by.
He's sort of done this little you know, that's not the sort of.
You do look, you do find the smallest bloody things, don't you, Justin?
It's funny, funny the things you pick up on, actually. And that,
I've got a brilliant one for later, and you're going to love it. But
I do like these little bits that you pick up because I'm like, I ain't fucking clear what you're talking about. But then when I go back to look at it, I'm like, Jesus Christ, what? How did you how did you spot that?
But then he shoots back into Bond, where he's sipping the sherry and he's talking about the year. And M goes, "There's no year for sherry, Bond." He said, "No, but there is for such and such." And then he says, "Oh, I'm amazed with this. So there is a subject you're not an expert on."
The reason why I think Diamond's a little bit flawed, there's two reasons. One, I think the main reason was that some of it was actually nicked from Goldfinger. It's like, so the sherry bit was basically like the brandy or whiskey scene from Goldfinger.
Yeah, yeah. I remember it well, yeah, because we commented on it. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically they nicked that. And actually the actual story itself overall was nicked over from Goldfinger, but it included diamonds. It was about diamonds instead. And that's why I think there was a flaw. They could not better a movie, which basically is, in most fans' opinion, the ultimate Bond. And also some camp stuff started to get camp and joking things started coming into this Bond.
I was getting confused with who was crossing who and who was double crossing and working for who a little bit at the beginning with these workers and the diamonds. And
what you said about ripping the story off from Goldfinger, now that you've mentioned that, yeah, that does make an awful lot of sense. In fact, now I'm thinking back, there's loads of comparisons.
Well, in the book, I think actually Bond goes to South Africa on a mission, but obviously a ban on South African travel due to apartheid at the time. And I think they've rushed this movie. Okay, I've got a good idea. Why don't we basically rip off Goldfinger, but do diamonds where someone wants to take over the diamond market? Is even with the Shirley Bessie song, that is a sort of rip-off as well from Goldfinger's song that she did.
Well, that's weird now you've mentioned it, and also with the song as well. Yeah, things are starting to click in my head. I'm starting to make the comparisons.
So in other words, then, we're sort of already agreeing or depicting that this was a rushed film with pre-scripted scenes to save writing them again and reacting bits that have been done in previous films.
Well, there was a reason for that, why they probably rushed it, because...
They had four... Well, how long was... This is 71, so they had 2 years, because 69 was the last one, wasn't it?
Yeah, so when I mean rushed it, that your production is normally about 6 months or 4 months to make a movie. So I'm talking about that production period.
They're so do you think they struggled to find an actor then? Do you think that might be what it was, that actually they couldn't find the Bond to do it? And what the possibility is that Connery... They knew that they needed a Bond and they were running out of time because they wanted to keep up with schedule. So therefore they went, well, we're going to have to re-employ him, aren't we? And he, that's why he was smug. Because I haven't told you, you'd have to re-me.
That wasn't the case. They had someone called, an American actor called Gavin something, and they'd already paid him $500,000 to actually be Bond. But because they already had previously a new actor named George Lazenby, the head of United Artists said, I don't want I think it's John Gevins his name was, and he goes, no, I don't want John Gevins, I want Connery back. So that's the reason why Connery came back. They had an American actor ready to take over, but the guy head of the studio said, no way, we're going to have a second new actor, and if he goes after that movie, that's it, the franchise will be over. So that's why they had Connery back. Paul, can you please check up about John Gevins? Was he offered diamonds or forever? I'm sure he was offered $500,000 or dollars, sorry.
John Gavin was signed for the role of James Bond in the film Diamonds Are Forever in 71 after George Lazenby left. Okay, let me just expand this article. So he was signed for James Bond in the film Diamonds Are Forever after George Lazenby left the role. However, David Picker, head of United Artists, wanted the box office assurance of Sean Connery. Gavin's contract was honoured despite losing the role to Connery. According to Roger Moore's James Bond diary, Gavin was slated to play Bond in Live and Let Die, but Harry Saltzman insisted on a British actor for the role and Moore was given the part. So he actually had the opportunity to potentially be in two Bond movies, but because of higher ups, he was... Yes. Fuck off. No, I love the fact they honoured his contract. It says nothing here about how much he was paid, but let's just say that, you know, you are 100% correct, and $500,000. That's not bad, is it?
Not bad.
Yeah, you don't have to fucking turn up.
Sitting on the bench, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you think about 1971, that was a lot of money, $500,000. So, yeah, not a bad gig, is it? No, sorry, mate. We don't need to do it. Go away, but there's your money.
I'll tell you what I did like, straight away, coming on to the lovely subject of cars, was the Triumph Stag.
Yes.
Really liked seeing that. And also the hovercraft leaving from Dover.
That was nationalised as well. It had the national...
It was. It was. It was part of... I think that was being part of British Rail, or included as part of British Rail.
All right, I'm going to throw a point in to the discussion. And that's Kidd and Wint.
Oh.
Yeah, okay, yes.
Oh. I love the fact that we're getting like progressive politics thrown in as early as 1971. It's great.
Well, when they hold hands walking off.
Yeah. And then on the plane, one of them says something which is quite attractive for a woman. Yeah, just really making it really obvious.
And you can see he was really jealous about that as well.
Yeah. They were really underutilized characters, I think, in this film. I think that there could have been something quite good there, but they just sort of turned up a few times and that was it. There was no real depth to them.
Who were they really working for, though?
Well, that was it as well. Is that because it wasn't really mentioned by Blofeld at all?
I don't know. Where their loyalties were, who they were essentially being, paid for.
I think they were contract killers, so they were paid for, I guess, by Blofeld. I don't know. It's not really explained, and that's what I mean. It was a missed opportunity because they could have been quite good characters.
I think I would have liked seeing those characters actually sort of being brought back in another one or two movies afterwards rather than killing them off with the bomb, basically, and putting it between his legs and throwing them off the boat or whatever. Because if you think about your
that bit was funny. It's like the most excitement he'd had in a day, wasn't it?
Because if you think about it, it was quite risque for the time. Because don't forget, society generally is much more conservative than it is now. So actually, I have to take my hats off with the actual Bond producers to take that risk.
Hang on a minute. It, from the televised point of view, but was this in the books?
I think they were in the books.
Remember. So it wasn't risque at all then, was it?
Well, I mean risque. It was risque to put it on screen, not risque by including it.
And I was very drawn to Jill T, whatever her name was.
Jill St. John.
Jill St. John. Now, the thing is, actually, I had to look this up, and I thought I knew it wouldn't be because of the difference in the time, but I was watching her, and I was thinking, she looks very, very much like Holly Gennaro from Die Hard. And I thought, I can't be the same actor because there's too much distance. She was young in Die Hard. But I looked up, it wasn't the same person, but I thought maybe it might have been of her mum or something. It's obviously a resemblance. But honestly, if you put... They're doppelgangers. If you put, I forget, I don't know what Holly Gennaro's off-screen name is, her real name is, but if you put them together, which I did, they look almost identical.
So I just wanted to ask you something. Do you remember your parents ever watching a program called Heart to Heart?
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Well, she was in that. That's why you probably recognised her.
No. It wasn't because I recognised her from somewhere else. It was the similarity between. I'd seen her in other stuff, but it was just that she looked a lot like her.
Very weird, though, why she was in a negligee or underwear as soon as Bond turned up as that diamond smuggler fella.
But yeah, I think it was, you're right, it was a little bit forced. I think it was a case where they sort of wanted people to see how beautiful this lady was, or her body was, and stuff like that. And that's why it might be even a fashion thing as well at the time. I don't know, it might be the design of those laundry and stuff like that, that who wanted her to sort of show their product. I don't know. And I think she was actually pretending to be a head of brothel as well in Amsterdam, because if you remember, that was actually based in Amsterdam.
Yeah, that's a point. I hadn't considered that. She could have been pretending to be a madame, whatever they're called. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Another observation that was just off that topic is that there is lots of hair in this movie. You can definitely tell the 70s have come in now. Yeah. That transition from the 60s clean cut look to the 70s. Now everyone's got fucking hair everywhere. I noticed even Connery, his eyebrows are quite thick and he's got big sideburns and stuff. And it's so obvious the change in personal grooming trends. His hair is everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not only that,
proper just mullets. Going
on. Yeah, so that was one thing. But another thing that both of them, I think Connery was having a bit of fun with her offset as well.
All right, because I did wonder about that, because you don't read a lot of gossip about these things, because you think Sean Connery being as big as he was in Hollywood at that time, he must have been beating it away with a stick. You know what it's like.
Yeah, I know, as you know,
me, but we own Hollywood. I can relate to that. I mean, you know, it's hard. It's tough, mate. It's tough, you know.
Well, but basically, people don't realise, but Connery was a bit of a geezer. He had so many affairs as well, because he got divorced from his original wife, who is his Jason Connery's mother. And then I think he was a bit of a playboy in between, where he would just be going around Hollywood because he was one of the most attractive guys
when he pulled the body in and changed the wallets, she pulled it out and the card that came out was a Playboy Club card.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just more product placement.
More placement.
Yeah, but it was, what a cool looking card that was, though. I want one of those.
I think you can get them now with the new club. But anyway, that's beside the point. We'll sort that out for you.
I'll just email Hef now. Oi!
Yeah.
You'll never get through. You'll never read it.
Yeah, that's right.
It was dead.
Yeah, exactly.
Fucking waste of your time, mate.
Yeah.
There's a bit in that whole Amsterdam scene, though, where that guy, the real diamond smuggler, goes to see Tiffany Case, and Connery is there by the wall. Do you remember this bit?
And he's like this. Yeah. I thought that was utter shit. That was so wrong. I don't think people actually did that.
Yeah, I thought people only did that in school playgrounds. Fucking ridiculous.
How do you do that? Anyway,
I mean, do they teach that in MI5 and MI6, do they? It's like, maybe. You get stuck.
But, you know, the funniest thing is, are you English?
I thought I was pissing myself because I was about to say...
I can speak English.
Yeah, but it was a Fawlty Towers scene with Manuel in it and the moose's head. You know, I speak English. I learned it from my book.
Yeah. Yeah, it was something like that. Yeah, it was. But don't forget, at the time... Let's be honest, how many people of different backgrounds did people in England or Britain meet? I mean, it was a completely different world. So I do understand why they sort of made Connery look like he couldn't speak English. But the way it came out was like it was a comedy, basically. He was taking a piss out of the Dutch more than anything.
Was that a Dutch accent? I don't think it was a Dutch accent. I'm not entirely sure what it was, to be quite honest.
Well, it was in Amsterdam, so it was meant to be a Dutch accent, but it was awful.
I think it was I don't think he could get rid of the Scottish out of that accent, could he? Really? Yeah. It was rubbish.
It was generic accent number three.
I thought it was a bit special, to be honest. I wouldn't have been like, oh, he's a native. I'd think, fucking hell, are you all right, mate?
Yeah. And then he said something in the lift as well. So he pretended he couldn't speak English. And I think he got his words the wrong way around. Like, do you want to use the lift? But he said it, a lift or something first. Down, and then the lift.
I kind of thought
that was him trying to integrate even more, because obviously German and Dutch are very similar in that, you know, most Germanic languages where they swap things around like that.
Yes.
So I go through the door rather than through the door I go. I think that's one of the examples.
It's very French. It's very, Yeah, it is. It's round the other way. Yeah. But it's a bit how Yoda talks, isn't it? You know, make a cup of tea, I will.
The fight scene, then. We're talking about the whole elevator thing, right? So the fight scene.
Yeah. Probably one of the best, they're saying, in Bond history, because it was done in such a small space.
I'd prefer to have watched George Lazenby have that fight.
Ooh, strong words.
With a proper round and up, you know, like a fucking hitting a fucking tennis ball punch, you know?
Well, yeah. I know what you're saying. I know exactly what you're saying.
Samir's got no fucking words to say. He's run out of words.
Exactly.
It's a first. This is a first.
I don't know what to say, to be honest with you, but yeah.
I think the fight scene was pretty good, I thought. I quite enjoyed it. It was fairly believable. Apart from a crowbar bit at the end, I think that ruined that for me.
Have you ever seen an apartment block with a crowbar just attached to the wall for a burglar just help themselves in?
No, that's exactly what I thought. I thought that's a security hazard, that is. I mean, you could just use that to break someone's door in. Yeah.
Oh, it's there in case you forget your key. Oh, right.
I think it was got to do with the sort of lifts they had at the time.
I think it was just there for the sake of the movie. I don't think
it was
that...
there for the sake of the movie, yeah. Because if you're stuck in the lifts, Samir, how would you get to the crowbar?
That's true.
Go magic arm.
Yeah, it's like, oh, fuck's sake, it's right there. If only I could reach that crowbar.
I'm trying to come out with some logical excuse to have it there. But yeah, that was quite stupid. It's like sometimes when, you know, you're in a movie and then suddenly that person has a knife next to them or a gun next to them out of nowhere and it's an unusual place and you think, okay. So yeah, it doesn't make sense why they would have that.
Like, what, the guy in the cement who had a gun? Why would he have needed that? Did he know the bomb was going to turn up and he needed that gun in the cement, did he? Oh, I better keep this gun just in case, you know?
Yeah, you never know. You never know, working in that sort of business, who's going to take you when?
I know. He's the one that put the crowbar there because he knows the lift is unreliable and he probably forgot his keys.
Exactly. Congratulations, 10 out of 10. Anyway, that's all from us for Diamonds Are Forever.
Yeah, it was fucking shit. We're done.
I think you're right. I think also, if you, because coming back to what you said, Paul, about the fashion and stuff like that, if you look at the Connery suit, it looks a bit more rougher than the neat suits he had in the earlier movies where they were really pristine.
Yeah, I do actually have an image of Connery in this movie, a rather pronounced image, and that's of him he's sort of stooping over quite a lot. I think at that particular time in history, Las Vegas was pretty much run by the mob.
Well, and there was nothing really much there. I mean, it's like looking at Dubai back in the 80s. I mean, there's a scene, I think, they drive away, and it's empty with construction going on and just big plots of dust land and that is waiting to be built on. It was nothing like Las Vegas is today, anywhere close, in fact. You know, and I think a lot of those ridiculous bloody 1970s bloody Dukes of Hazzard and Chips and fucking highway patrol chases with the police cars. Yeah, you know, I think at one point they were just literally ran out of set. They were just going around the same fucking same shops.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. There was a lot of repeated background, wasn't there? And you could see the same people just going.
Yeah, it was. It was. Yeah.
I think it was the reason was basically down could close down certain parts of Vegas or strip, only certain part of the strip. That's why they had to go around the same shops.
Thinking of Las Vegas, it's one of the last places on Earth I'd want to go.
I completely agree. Joe said to me, he said, "Would you like to go to Las Vegas?" I said, "No, I've got absolutely no interest in going there whatsoever." Absolutely none. Thank you very much.
I'd rather go to, if they're talking about just going to a casino or gambling, I'd rather go to Monaco, mate.
They weren't the best sets. I've always talked about elaborate sets, and we do see a few here, actually, with Willard White's penthouse, which I absolutely, again, thought was bloody brilliant, and how that looked. But these weren't particularly great sets. They're very sort of bogo standard, not very nice.
Yeah, I mean, the actual casino...
Yeah,
definitely. Like a Wetherspoons, inside of a Wetherspoons. Yeah. The casino that they're kind of following her around in and stuff. You know, people in suits, by the way, amongst like touristy types in t-shirts and polo shirts and shorts. You've got fucking geese walk around in suits.
Yeah.
Pretty damn obvious who they are. But yeah, that particular casino scene set that they were in, it did look like the inside of a Wetherspoons. It looked fucking awful.
They're
very obvious, aren't they? And also the guy with the radio, but I think he's going, yep, ready when you are, you know, it's like, fuck, come on. You know, there's nothing undercover about that at all, was there?
I think the highlight of the casino was Plenty O'Toole.
Oh, she's pretty.
Yes, your audio cut out there, mate.
Yes, yeah,
very fantastic. Very, you know, very wholesome.
And that's why when she turns around to Connery and she goes, "My father called me Plenty," and he goes, "Obviously, he did, darling."
Yeah. Oh, that's the one I got thrown out the window.
Yeah,
that's the one, yeah.
Yeah, I know you're talking about now, yeah.
And she's a famous sister of Natalie Wood. The guy at number two in Natalie Woods. You know number two in Austin Powers? The guy who played number two in Austin Powers?
Oh, yeah.
Wagner?
Yeah, Robert Wagner, yeah.
That was Robert Wagner's sister-in-law.
So from a technical point of view with this movie, I picked up on the fact that the dubbing in places
terrible
was awful.
Yeah.
Again, there seems to be an awful lot of poor dubbing. Now, in this day and age, you watch a movie, and if there's anything like that, you just jump on it, don't you? Like, what on earth is going on there? I guess with all the technology and stuff that we've got available to us today. But dubbing, it was just shockingly bad.
Well, it's the same as with the foleying as well. That was equally as bad, you know, with funny sounds and screeches where you wouldn't actually expect them to be or need them or have them.
We're going back to the start. It's when, you know, Connery basically is being sort of said, hold it, Mr. Bond, and he's got his hands up, and then they're trying to take his cigarette case out, and suddenly he's trapped and he starts bleeding.
But that's Bond, though, isn't it? That's just typical Bond. To be honest with you, the look on his face when that happened was like, fuck, I forgot that was in there.
Yeah. But what I'm trying to say...
How useful is that? I wonder if I've got a grenade in the other one.
But yeah, it's them sort of things that make me laugh sometimes. It's like, he's got the right stuff for the right situation that appears from nowhere, and you think, bloody hell, this guy can read minds.
Well, I'll tell you what didn't have. When the circus scene... was over the top of the casino.
And, oh yes,
I thought that's even with the safety nets. I thought would that happen today?
Well, don't forget, Vegas is a place where rules are there to be broke. That's what I think it is.
Actually, we also forgot to mention the spirit of continuity of characters. That of course Felix changed again.
I've got a point about that. Yeah, I did pick up on it.
Yeah, because we wouldn't know if he didn't say Felix, you old thingy. You know, there would have been none the fucking wiser who he was. You know, he was, what, half the size, a bit more tubby?
But the thing is, can I
just say that? We are moaning about characters changing, but how many Bonds has there been?
Yeah,
five, isn't it? Is it five?
But then,
you know, for the length of time that these films have gone on for, I mean, if whether they were still trying to roll Sean Connery out for Spectre, you know, he's like fucking 90 something before he died, and they're still trying to pass him off as Bond. It just wouldn't work, would it?
No.
I'd like to see that film, though. I would like to see that version of Spectre. That would have been fucking interesting to watch.
But hang on a minute, though. Hang on. You wouldn't have. No, you see, this is. I think what people forget with this, with Bond, is that it's always James Bond. He doesn't age. He's immortal.
We're
watching 21 films through, you know, four or five decades here. But theoretically, he never ages.
Yes.
If you really think about it, you know, because the new Bond that's yet to be released, I think there's been a lot of talk, it's a female. It's not about James Bond. It's 007, isn't it?
Yeah, well, basically, the reason why we've had different actors, they didn't realise how successful this is going to be. It's basically a gravy train, right? And it was originally to do the first 12 books, and then that's it, end it, and that's it. Bond would be part of history. But obviously the producers saw the sort of money coming in and thought, nah, we need to carry on. And plus, they were forced to change it as well because of Connery leaving the part first time around. After You Only Live Twice. Otherwise, I think the idea was just to continue with Connery and finish the 12 books and then call it a day. That was the idea.
Right. And then what you're essentially saying is absolutely right, Sumit, is that, you know, it's James Bond throughout all of the books. Therefore, the films have to depict James Bond.
And yes, that's right.
You can, and you can read one book or you can write 10 books within 5 or 6 years, but you can't do 21 films within that short space of time and depict all of it. Again, I come back to DC Comics and Marvel Comics. You can't do the whole lot in one go, but you have to follow the comic books. So certain superheroes dying or new ones being introduced or then doing spin-offs and TV shows. Same with Star Wars and The Mandalorian and all the rest of it, and seeing backstories, because this is not people writing new material. It's filmography of existing material.
Yes, and there was another reason why they had to change directors as well, because in the books, Bond's in his mid-30s, early 40s, basically, because 00s by mid-40s were basically resigned from the 007 or 00T. So that's why. So they could have never ever sort of had Connery playing a part until he was 80 or 90, because they would have said, hold on, how come this guy, according to book, should have resigned or would have been basically resigned as a 00 agent? Yeah. So that was another reason why they had to change it. Although there's been two actors now who are in their 50s who have been in the part of Bond in modern time. One's Sir Roger Moore and one's Daniel Craig. But it didn't work because the audience started realising when you get to a certain age, it doesn't work. You can't do certain things.
Well, of course, I understand that. I'm like that at 42, mate. I now can't do certain things.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, yeah.
One of the notes I've got as well, again, you know, we talked last film about it being 2 hours and 20 minutes and too long and how they could cut things down and you would have still got the point. This one was 2 hours long, which I wonder whether they thought that themselves. But even so with this one, there were scenes like the girl in the cage turning into a gorilla, which I didn't, other than promoting or portraying Vegas as a bit of a freak show, which some would suggest Vegas, you know, say, oh, that shit you only could do in Vegas because it's for the freak shows, isn't it? And I thought, why would that scene? That's completely pointless. I didn't understand the purpose of it.
Has Paul gone to sleep?
No, I'm still here. It was a pointless scene. It was obviously she was using it as a distraction. That's why she went in there, to try and lose the two fellas. So that's the only thing I think that it was in there for, is to show that she's a bit savvy. She's done this before. You know, she's obviously had people following her before because she's smuggling diamonds. So.
It's to me, I'll be very frank and honest with you, it's like on, how can I say, I think Bond's level of sort of set design and how good they went from there to there in this movie. I really do feel the standards have gone lower down. There's two, I think the main reason was that if they went over schedule, I think per day, Connery was going to get paid like $100,000. So I think they also dealt with eating into their budget. And that's why they made sure that they did things on time, because they didn't want to obviously pay Connery that money as well. So I don't know.
So there's no love in this, then, was there? There's no, you know, whatever you do, do it well. If you love what you do, it's not a job. It's just money orientated, isn't it? You know, this film had to be done, you know, to keep it going. Otherwise, you know, people would lose interest, and the whole big idea, of Salzburg and all that. Etc. Now, I'm going to cut the bollocks short, because one of the things I saw, which I loved actually, was the 1971 Mustang Mach 1, which would have been another car not seen before this film at the airport. That was released in 71, and it was the last, people regard that car as one of the last true V8s before the emissions rules and sound came in 72.
So that was the one that that Tiffany Chase was driving, right?
Yeah, the red one. Yeah.
It was a very nice car, that, yeah.
Yeah. So I looked at this earlier. That car was not seen, a bit like the Rolls Royce in the previous one. That was not seen before this movie. That would have been fucking hell, what is that?
But if it was a choice between having that and that space buggy, I would have had the space buggy.
Yeah.
That looks shit hot.
with all four wheels, or do you reckon it worked with only three wheels?
Because you saw the one bounce across the screen. Yeah.
And then suddenly it had four wheels again.
But that whole thing,
which we get to, I'm sure, was utterly ridiculous and utterly pathetic. And I just pissed myself laughing all the way through that.
But there's a few things in that scene. It's one that Connery runs into that whole space scene and you've got guys giving it all this, right? And he comes legging through and you're like, what the fuck? What the fuck's that all about?
He goes, stop him. And the guy's like...
Yeah.
It's like you wanted to say to him, you don't have to pretend you're in space now, you dickhead. You can move normally.
It was so weird. So bizarre. I had to wind that back and watch it twice.
I think it was a case where they were pretending, you know, where there was conspiracies, theories at the time that did men really go into space? Or not into space, or onto the moon?
They were completely taking the piss out of that conspiracy that it was a theatrical moon landing.
Yeah. So I think it was basically about that. But I loved the way, I don't know if you've seen photographs, but actually Connery used to play golf on that set, practice his swing on the moon.
Yeah, I've seen a few photographs of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I love the way he also just managed to get in that space buggy and just knew the right buttons to push to get it to work.
Always, isn't it? It's always.
Of course. He's a part of the British Navy commander, isn't he?
Hmm.
Stiff upper lip, know where exactly everything is. We have got the best Navy in the world, best trained.
No, we haven't. Again. Switzerland has, isn't it, Paul?
Yeah. The Swiss Navy.
Yeah.
That bit, yeah.
Yeah.
In Blofeld's office where there's two of them and he's talking. Yeah, and that cat on the sofa, leather sofa. There's no way, because cats all fucking claws, isn't there? I wouldn't have that. So get off that.
That was a good point, actually, because there was two cats. Now, was that supposed to think that, would it Blofeld clone, so the cat's been cloned as well? I mean, how would they think that? Yeah,
was there two cats? I didn't realize
was it
two
in
cats.
The mirror, or was it a reflection then?
I thought it was just the one cat that was sat on the sofa because he kicked it, didn't he? And it fucking went across the room.
If you look at it,
there was two cats. He had the right cat, but the wrong Blofeld. Who liked the sort of Honda sort of what do you call him? Scooters in the desert. What is it called?
Oh, that's the trikes. Yeah, that's where we're at. Although I don't understand the big balloon tires. They seemed a bit ridiculous. I'm not quite sure.
Because it was all part of the space thing, wasn't it? They were like space quad things. I don't think that they were petrol. I think it was just sort of themed that way. And I seem to remember seeing ones like that used on sand, like beach quads or sand quads. And because it's a desert. That's why they are, but they're like mini moto things. They look massively uncomfortable, very unstable, and very difficult to use. Which clearly showed in the shooting of this that the people riding them didn't actually get given much practice on them. And the most bit that wound me up the most was where the one came off and he got back on, and he obviously did it all too quickly because Bond wasn't anywhere near him, and he just sort of started it up and then just had to sit there for like 3 seconds and not do anything because Bond hadn't quite arrived to punch him in the face. Why didn't they fucking, you know, when they speed things up, like the duck on the head, and why didn't they speed that bit up? You know, but that again is just an indication that it was rushed.
Yeah.
Yeah, and not only that, I think Connery didn't like riding those quad bikes because if you think about it, he was 6'2", 6'3", or something like that.
Well, he did the posh push with it at the end, didn't he? When he got back to the Mustang, he sort of did the Waitrose posh push.
Yeah,
it was like, oh no, fuck off, you know, and sort of just pushed it away.
Sorry, hold on. The Waitrose posh push.
Yeah, the Waitrose posh push. You know, you have to put.
I don't know what you're talking about, but yeah, I'm just going on.
You know, the people that have their Range Rovers, they go to Waitrose, and you have the pound in the trolley. But there's not. What's the point in walking the trolley back for a pound? So you don't need the pound. You just push the trolley off. You just go fuck off with the trolley.
Right, I understand now. Right, yeah. I've never.
It's called the Waitrose posh push.
I was not aware of that. So if we do have an international audience, which we do actually, most of our video views are people in India, funny enough.
Are they?
Yeah, no idea why that is.
Well, but everybody in India, Waitrose is basically where you buy everything you can buy in any other supermarket, but it's 10 times more expensive.
Yeah, that's a pretty good summarization of it. Yeah,
you can't go shopping to Lidl or Audi in a Range Rover. You have to go to Waitrose or Marks and Spencer's. You know, it's like a class system, you know.
So the Waitrose posh push. Well, I've learned something tonight. I will take that. Do you still have to put a quid in shopping choice? I thought they'd stop that now.
Yeah, no. That's right. But the thing is, though, that's why the best dressed trolley collectors are in Waitrose, because they get so much money during the day because they plug the trolleys and they keep the pound. So, and he normally got the guy from Lidl hiding in the bushes waiting to fucking grab the trolley.
Right, I'm going to go and apply for a job at Waitrose then.
I mean, that's it. Be a trolley boy. We have to be called Malcolm though for that, didn't he?
Jesus. Bloody hell.
So should we try and steer this back towards this?
Yes, please.
Yeah.
Diamonds are forever. Yeah. Yeah. Right,
I'm just coming up to the space part where he comes out and the guy says stop him because they're all going really slow acting it out, because obviously it's not weightless because Sean Connery and the security guards are running in and out. Yeah. And I'm just a bit now where he runs past him, he goes stop him, he's like,
I seem to remember that you know, stop him bit as well was out of like a tannoy system as well. So yet again we've got this kind of guy sat in an office somewhere, one, two, doing the countdowns, and so stop him, push the red button. It's really weird.
Yeah, I think they kept that sound from the 60s, basically. Felt like that because it was like that in all the Bond 60s Bond movies. So yeah, and it was quite funny when he meets Bambi and Thumper.
Oh, that was an annoying scene as well. That was.
They were both actually members of the American Olympic gymnast team. And I think one of them actually became Olympic champion. I don't know which one, but yeah.
Well, you had to tell they were quite gifted because they were doing all these somersaults and everything else over the place. But
I know what you're saying. They're quite flexible. And I know you just...
No, it was just a whole overly acted dramatic scene. I just didn't understand it.
Yeah.
What made me laugh was out of shape Connery gets smashed, and then he takes them, they throw him in the water, they jump after him, and then that's the time when he gets them.
You wouldn't be able to do that, hold somebody's head underwater, because you could just change your whole body weight, flip out, especially if they're professional gymnasts.
Yeah.
But neither here nor there, is it? It's a Bond movie. It's the 70s.
It's the 70s. I think he was just sort of a little bit sort of cocky towards the end of that, in that swimming pool, holding those heads down and that. Just didn't
say hello to Bambi. Say hello to Thumper.
Yeah. Oh, you met Bambi and Bobby or whatever their fucking names were.
Yeah, Thumper, right? Thumper, like,
was it?
Yeah.
Bambi and Thumper, because it's from the Disney movie, isn't it?
Bambi. Yeah, that's right. Bambi. Yeah. And actually, that's interesting, really. Were they? That's Walt Disney, so they were just advertising that they were allowed to do that, were they?
Yeah, but it wasn't an animated segment of the film, was it? He weren't fighting a fucking baby deer and a rabbit, was he?
Yeah, but it was. But it was referenced to
yeah, but you can't have trademarks on names, can you? You can't have, you know, you can't say, well, you said Thumper, so therefore you owe me money. Computer problems, which is just phenomenal, really. I think I spent fucking 1,700 quid on a new computer less than 2 months ago, and I paid for fucking ridiculous internet speeds, and I'm the one having fucking problems. There you go.
That's just sod's law, that, mate.
It's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah. So, yeah, I know. Yeah. That's great.
I'll tell you what's equally ridiculous was the Oompa Loompas again on the oil rig, wasn't it? With the fucking orange painted boots, which you can clearly see have been spray painted.
Well, that was a disappointment at the end, was the actual oil rig, because I thought they would have had a better base for the bad guy, for Blofeld. But it was because I think they were running out of time and budget. I think that's why they just got, why don't we have an oil rig in the middle of the sea? I think it was done in not North Sea, but where was it done? It was done anyway, somewhere, middle of somewhere on a real rig. But it's just awful.
Yeah.
It's really awful. Especially when he comes in that bubble thing and he goes, hello, we thought the environmental so-and-so thought we'd drop in to make sure you're not causing pollution or something. Yeah, right. That's plausible, yeah.
So overall then, what do we think? I mean, again, you know, with this stupid satellite in space, I mean, did it just instantly stop it in its tracks in space before it fired? Just again, another big continuity thing for me. It was like
they changed the tapes, didn't they? So if you change the
tapes, it doesn't stop in space. The satellite and the Earth are moving. It doesn't just like, oh, I'm going to stop still in space and fire, does it?
So it stopped the firing bit, but it didn't stop it shut down the firing of the laser, but not obviously the satellite.
I think they were as keen to get this film finished as we are to talk about it.
Yeah, I think you're right. Coming back to what you're saying, I have to be honest with you, it is one of the harder porn movies to talk about because it is awful. But the ironic thing was, they actually offered, which was a world record feat again, for Connery to come back in Live and Let Die, a $5.5 million at the time. No actor in history at the time had earned that. That was his basic wage they offered him, and he turned around and goes, nah, thanks, but no thanks. I've had enough Bond.
Well, never. Because he probably didn't enjoy it. If the opening scene clearly is the tone in which he wanted to do this film. So there was never going to be any more, no matter how much money offered. If he didn't want to do it, he was probably, I bet you when they called cut on the final scene of this film, he had a fucking helicopter waiting or a car waiting and he was off. There was no after party or anything. That was it. Yeah, well, excellent. See you later. Fucking glad that's over.
I'll see you when the debut of the movie in London or whatever, premiere of the movie. Yeah, basically, he was offered this world record thing and the heart wasn't there. He said, he goes, it's not about the money. He goes, I don't care. He wasn't interested at all. He just said no. Yeah. And he actually gave his own blessing to Roger Moore when he got the part, because I don't know if you know the story. Him, Roger Moore, and Michael Caine were best mates when in London together. So it's quite amazing how one of his best mates got the gig.
I'm going to flip it on its head. I'm going to say that actually, we're all looking at this the wrong way. You're all watching this movie wrong because you're taking it too seriously. I think that this whole script is done almost like tongue in cheek. Takes the piss out of itself in certain places, this movie. And I think that's what really upset a lot of Bond fans, which is why this is seen as being one of the worst ones, is because it's humorous. It clearly seems to take the piss out of itself. And I quite enjoyed it for that, because the previous Bond movies are all trying to be really serious and, you know, these little quips that Bond makes after he kills someone and that, it's just fucking cringeworthy. Whereas this, we didn't mention the tunnel bit where he was in the pipes being laid in the desert.
Yeah.
And he manages to get out of that and he's talking to the rat and stuff. You know, it's these little humorous moments that kind of make the whole thing a little bit light and fluffy to watch. And, you know, I didn't mind it. Didn't mind it. There was bits in it that were awful, definitely. But overall, as a film, I really didn't mind watching this one at all. I just switch the brain off and watch it for entertainment value.
Well, I'm going to actually say something. I think Paul's right. We are looking at this in a wrong way. I think the reason why it was awful, it was the wrong actor playing Bond for the comedy or the way it was done, tongue in cheek. To me, if that was Roger Moore, it may have been more interesting. I think basically we may have accepted it more, but because it was Connery, who had always been that serious Bond, where he would make that one liner after killing a bad guy or something like that, we didn't, and he was very serious in the other previous Bond movies. I think we just could not accept Connery having those jokes, especially, you know, the one you're talking about, the tunnel, where he smells in his clothes and he could smell the cologne, and he goes, oh, one of us smells a little bit rosy, and then he comes out and he goes, it was me, old chap, when he said that to the rat, basically, or something like that, on those lines. So those things were, I think, was anyway the beginning of what they were looking for Roger Moore, but minus Roger Moore in the movie. And I think that's where it went wrong. Yeah, I don't think it suited Connery's
That's fair enough. Maybe I'm being overly hard, but you know, that's what we're here to talk about. So,
yeah, that's an interesting point. I hadn't really considered that, but yeah, because the future Roger Moore ones are all a little bit of a piss take, isn't there? They're all a bit, it's hard to take those movies seriously because, well, the way that Roger Moore is, you had that kind of like smirk on his face, didn't he? Like everything was a joke. Yes. So, yeah, I think that's a good point. I hadn't considered that, but yeah. Maybe they should just put Roger, instead of fuck it, and get more in and play that.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's leave it there, shall we?
Let's leave it there. Yep.
Good. All right. Well, that's another one wrapped up in the can, as they say. So what are we doing next?
Living up it for discussion.
Maybe our audience could make a suggestion. You know, make a suggestion. If, I mean, if someone paid enough money, I'd watch that again.
Yeah, that's an interesting ploy. We'll just pay money to make Justin do shit. Well, I mean, that's a good point, actually. All the stuff that you can see on Justin's screen there, you can find us on all those different social media icons. I'm pretty sure that you can pick them up. You can obviously listen to this as well in audio format, so you don't have to watch us. And yeah, you can, of course, donate to us as well if you like on Patreon and buymeacoffee.com. So there you go.
And subscribe.
Yeah, that's a big factor, actually. Yeah, you know, all you bastards that sit out there and watch this and don't even like the video. I mean, Christ almighty. You know, if you've watched it, there must be a bit of it you like. So hit the fucking like button, innit? It's not difficult. Right. And the subscribe as well. Christ almighty.
Absolutely.
Man, we're putting this out for nothing. Yep. You can't even subscribe. What's the matter with you? All right, let's leave it there. Okay, so we will, I guess I'll post it on social media what movie we're going to be doing next. And yeah, we'll see you next time. So it's goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me, guys.
And goodbye from me.